You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride, and today I'm joined by Dave Prentice and Adam Jones as we chew the fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park. But mainly, we are here to look back at last night's 1-0 win over Southampton, and then, of course, look ahead to Thursday night's game with West Brom, where Everton could go into the top four. Very interestingly, that would be two. But we will start at Goodison. Preno, a home win, my kingdom for a home win. And we finally got one, didn't we? Dating back till December in the Arsenal game in the league, that's the last time until last night that we'd won a home league game, remarkably. Perhaps not as comfortable as we would have liked, but deserved probably.
I would agree that the significance was in the result rather than the performance. It's incredible to think that it's been so long since, Everton have actually enjoyed a home win or, sort of back-to-back Premier League wins. And as we said, in the preview podcast earlier in the week or last week, this was a really, really significant match in terms of, what it could do for the rest of the season to build on the momentum that was generated with, the famous win at Anfield. This won't be a famous win. It won't be remembered, for very long. But it was vitally important that Everton won. And I think what was important as well is that we almost sort of won playing within ourselves. I mean, Carlo sent out a team, as he always does, sort of designed to win that game. But he clearly had half an eye on the bigger picture, I think, with the games that are coming in the near future thick and fast in terms of the substitutions that the substitutes that he named in terms of the three players that he rested with, very, very minor knocks. I know you should always just take each game as it comes, but clearly he was looking ahead to the bigger picture, and that can sometimes trip you up. You can sometimes get sort of caught out if you do that, but he did it absolutely immaculately. I mean, you could argue that, relied heavily on an absolutely top-class performance from Jordan Pickford. I say top-class, he wasn't like, an inspired form throughout, but he made one massively important save when it mattered. And his distribution was superb all night. It really was. So all in all, it was a very, very important win, the significance of which, sort of outweighs maybe the quality or the lack of excitement that was on show. Everton had to win. We did win. And we can now look forward to Thursday with even more confidence.
Yeah, absolutely, Preno. Adam, do you share that sentiment that it was, in the circumstances, what was at stake in terms of keeping the pressure up on the top four? And of course, as we mentioned at the top of the pod, without a home league win since December, is that your sort of overriding emotion from the game, that it was a case of just getting the job done and it didn't really matter how we did it?
Yeah, I think that's it, because I think Everton were probably in danger, after coming off the back of such a big win at Anfield, Everton were in danger of maybe, tempering that result and making it, seem a bit like, what was the point in that? If Everton had lost this game against Southampton, you'd have thought to yourself, it's another two steps back, like it was, against Fulham, against West Ham and against Newcastle as well, just to name a few. But, especially coming into a week in which they've got three games in the space of the next, seven, eight days, it was really important to get that started with a victory. And as you say, the run of home league games since middle of December, the last time Everton won a home league game, fans were there, which was just absolutely mental. So it was really, really good to be able to put that sort of record to one side as well. And I've seen a few people saying that obviously in the future the end game is that we want to be playing exciting football all the time, and we want to be able to win that way. But over the last few weeks we just haven't really been able to do that at home. We haven't been playing good football in any way, and we've been losing games as well that we should have been winning. So I think it was just It was very much a stripped back, sort of back to basics approach from Carlo Ancelotti in a way. It was almost as if we were looking at this like an away game, just get our noses in front, keep things as tight as possible, and just get the 3 points in any way that we could. You know, it was really interesting to see us, you know, pressing Southampton high and, you know, making sure that they just had no time on the ball, etc. You know, it's not usually what we'd expect to see from Everton at home. It's certainly not what we've seen from them over the last few weeks and months. So, you know, it was a nice little change. And, you know, Southampton will probably think that they put on a little bit of pressure in that second half, but, you know, their one big chance really came to a centre-back with a couple of minutes to go, really. So to be able to limit Southampton to just that opportunity throughout the 90 minutes, I think was really good as well. So all in all, I'd say it was probably a deserved win, and that's all that really matters at the end of the day, getting 3 points on the board and, you know, being able to move on into what's going to be, I think, another pretty tough game on Thursday. It was crucial.
Yeah, indeed. You know, Everton coming through another game, picking up another win, having seen less of the ball than the opposition. And interestingly as well, Adam, as you alluded to there, only two shots on target in the whole game. Southampton's one in the 90th minute and Richarlison's match-winning strike. Preno, on Richarlison, a couple of weeks ago, Carlo Ancelotti fired a public rocket, as much as Carlo will fire public rockets in Richarlison's direction after the Newcastle defeat. It feels like the message has been taken on board, because since then his form has taken quite an uplift.
100%, yeah. He's basically working a lot harder at his manager's request. But sometimes I think he just needs a little bit of a lift in confidence sometimes, certainly for strikers to start to produce. And he's got that now. You know, it's three successive games now he's scored in. And it's, you know, it's clear that once, you know, you do break that little barren spell, he wants to try things a little bit, you know, so more then. And that was a quality finish last night. Mm. I mean, I loved the goal all round. I mean, Calvert-Lewin, who again was excellent last night, you know, he just absolutely dominated the Saints back line in the air especially. But, you know, so he knocked one off his shoulder, and then Gylfi Sigurdsson, a lovely little ball in, but it still needed, you know, a polished finish. And having gone wide of the goalkeeper, there was a defender on the line that, you know, so Richarlison had to, he couldn't just roll it into an empty net. He had to really ping it in. It was similar, you know, here we go, nostalgia time. But, you know, so Adrian Heath's famous goal down at Oxford, you know, so the turning point in Howard Kendall's era, reminded me a little bit of that. But if anything, an even sharper opportunity, you know, he really had to drill it in. And he did, you know, and his performance was so important. I mean, we rely, you know, an awful lot on the goal threat from Richarlison, because Calvert-Lewin has carried that responsibility basically on his own shoulders most of the season. And we need to try and spread the goals, you know, return a little bit more, you know, so certainly James and Gylfi Sigurdsson can contribute more in that respect. But, you know, Richarlison finally getting back on the goal trail again just takes that bit of responsibility away from Calvert-Lewin. If it was in response to his manager's, you know, suggestions, should we politely say, fair enough, you know, so it's had the desired effect. And yet he's looking like an absolute threat again now. I mean, the television audience, I mean, you won't have heard this, but, you know, the commentators once again were on his case for the amount of time he was on the floor, rolling around, holding his shins. But he was taking cracks, you know, so a lot of the time he does tend to, you know, react a little bit to that. And Martin Atkinson clearly wasn't in the mood to be, giving him a free ride on that. But no, all in all, it was a very, very positive performance for Richarlison. And, you know, again, it augurs well, given the other number of games we've got coming, you know, thick and fast.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Adam, I mentioned it in my verdict, you know, Carlo earlier this season saying that Dominic and Richarlison should be getting 20 goals at least each. Dom's obviously on 18 and we'll get to 20 at least this season, won't he, all being well. Mm. Richarlison's got 11. Is there enough time for Richarlison to hit the magic 20 mark, do you think?
it really depends how long he's going to be playing through the centre, I think. I think if he's going to be playing up front with Calvert-Lewin in that sort of system, or maybe a different sort of style over the next couple of weeks, then yeah, I can see him continuing this scoring run, because I think he's been playing really well whenever he's been up front. And I think what really impressed me over the last, you know, two games in particular is how early he's taken these chances. You know, his one against Liverpool came inside like 3 minutes, was this one inside like 10 minutes, something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
he
was sharp to both opportunities right from the early stages of the game. You know, making those like a diagonal run in behind the two centre backs, which was, yeah, I think that's really promising to see, because, you know, he's just on it from the first whistle, and that's what we want to see. And, you know, that's I think he performed really well when he was up front against Man City as well, when he was quite fortunate to score on that occasion. But, you know, I think it was a well-deserved goal for the performance that he put in. So if he is going to be playing through the centre, then I don't see why he can't get 20 goals this season. But, you know, obviously you'd expect Calvert-Lewin to be taking some of them as well. And, you know, it all just depends on how much service they're going to get from the players in behind them, whether that's going to be Sigurdsson or whether it's going to be Dean from the wing, or, you know, James Rodriguez when he's back in the side, etc. You know, whatever if the three midfielders are going to be playing as well. I think it kind of puts the focus on them as well. But I think the only thing that Richarlison's probably got to worry about is, you know, what Preno mentioned there. And I think that was a game last night where, you know, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, Richarlison would have got really frustrated there with the amount of times he was getting booted by Southampton. Because I think there were two inside like a 5 minute sort of spell where Gineppo brought them down and then Bednarek brought them down. And, you know, they were two, you know, really bad challenges. Referee didn't punish them. But, you know, as Preno said, apparently the commentators were going, oh, he spent loads of time on the floor. Well, he's getting kicked. Like, I don't know what you're expecting him to do, to be honest. When he gets booted in the shins, he's probably going to stay down for a little bit. So, you know, teams, you know, if they're not picking up buttons for something like that, teams are going to keep targeting them over the next few weeks. So, you know, perhaps that's just something that he's got to be looking out for. You know, I know he does get targeted anyway, but, you know, maybe with him playing through the centre, he's going to get targeted by, you know, the centre-backs or the defensive midfielders. So, you know, maybe he just needs to watch out for something like that. But I think, you know, if he keeps this run of form going, then there's no reason to suggest that he can't get 9 goals from now until the end of the season. I think, you know, even if he doesn't, though, I think, you know, maybe a return of 15 from where he's been playing this season, and considering, you know, the dip in form that he has, I think a return of 15 would probably be a pretty good return for him at this rate. So, you know, fingers crossed he can get to 20, but I don't think it's the be-all and end-all if he doesn't.
Speaking of returns, Preno, Richarlison's fellow countryman back in the squad last night, Allen in midfield, the first appearance since mid-December, and he got the full 93 minutes in. It wasn't flawless by any stretch, but certainly it was a very good return, wasn't it? And I think certainly in patches for me anyway, his importance was highlighted.
Yeah, I think for me, it goes back to what I said at the outset, and that, you know, Carlo was clearly thinking of a bigger picture here and talking about or thinking about the games that are coming. I don't think we'll see Allen on Thursday, you know, but he clearly needed that game last night. And I think he was left on for the full 95 minutes in the end, wasn't it? Quite where Martin Atkinson got those last 2 minutes from. After the 3 minutes of time added on, I don't know. He certainly had plenty of us screaming at the television screen at one stage. But having got through that 95 minutes, I think, you know, he'll then be, you know, targeted maybe for the Chelsea game on the Monday, because he clearly needed the run out. For 20, 25 minutes, half an hour maybe, he looked like the Allen we know. He was excellent, patrolling in front of the back four, pinching the ball, using it very well. And then clearly the 2 months he spent out of the team began to show a little bit of rustiness, a little bit of tiredness maybe, gave away the ball once or twice. But I think that was to be expected, given the fact that he's been out, you know, for the best part of a couple of months now. So he needed that game, you know, so really badly. And I think that's also possibly why, you know, so Carlo left out Tom Davis last night with, as he said afterwards, just a very slight knock. Because I think, you know, he's got the ready-made, you know, replacement, but, you know, the ready-made individual to come in on Thursday at West Brom. So, again, I think he was thinking of, you know, the long-term, you know, sort of prospects for both players. So, yeah, it was great to see him back. He was, you know, important at moments, but he needed the 95 minutes, and it was good to see him get them under his belt and get through completely unscathed, because there was one moment in the second half where he was chasing a Southampton runner and he was going absolutely full pelt, and God, my heart was in my throat for his hamstring. Having been somebody that's had that experience of not going at full pelt, but your hamstring go when you're trying to sprint, you're thinking, oh God, no, don't. Yeah, but yeah. Clearly he's much younger and much fitter than I ever was. So yeah, it was great to see.
Yeah, and Adam, and you mentioned him in your piece this morning. That's back-to-back games now where Jordan Pickford has not just done okay, he's done very well. We spoke about, you know, previously his performance at Anfield. And last night, I think it was, you know, not only that final minute save from Vestergaard, which kept 3 points in the bag, but his distribution was really good, wasn't it, for the hole, wasn't it? Mm. So that's, you know, consistency has been Jordan's issue, hasn't it, recently, but that's really positive signs.
And I think it's the combination of these two games that really impressed me, to be honest, because, you know, I did see, you know, obviously there was loads of praise for Pickford after his performance at Anfield, but it was one of those where a lot of people were saying, oh, well, he was being worked every couple of minutes or so. They're the kind of performances that Jordan Pickford, you know, really likes when he's not got any time to, you know, let his thoughts wander or whatever. He just, like, shot after shot after shot or cross to save. But it was a very different sort of challenge for him last night. I thought Southampton were lumping balls into the box, but Jordan Pickford was commanding his area quite well, which I think he's done for the Liverpool game and for the Man City game as well, to be fair. I think there was one in particular, one corner in the second half, where he just ran right into a melee of players, got his fist on it, punched the ball away, took a bit of a clattering in the process, got knocked over. No complaints from him, just straight back up to his feet, and he was looking for the ball again, which is, you know, exactly what the kind of thing that we want to see from Jordan Pickford. We want him to be, you know, the man commanding that sort of 6 yard area in front of his goal line. Like, I know Everton play a very deep defensive line these days, so it might be a little bit hard for him to try and command that area, but you know, I think he did it really, really well last night, and it was one of those sort of games where he needed his concentration level to be as high as possible, because as we mentioned before, the one chance for Southampton came really, really late in the game, and he only essentially had one shot to save throughout the match, and he did it really, really well. You know, Vestergaard looked for all the world like he was going to score when he was turning on that ball, but Pickford was out like a rocket, made himself as big as possible, and you know, it was a really, really good save to make sure it went behind for the corner as well. So I think that all in all, when you combine those two performances, it kind of amalgamated everything that Everton want to see from their goalkeeper. I think that's something that we haven't really seen from Pickford for a long while, to be honest. And as you mentioned, you know, the consistency is something that's been missing from Pickford. So hopefully he can, you know, use these two games as a bit of a platform to build. You know, Ancelotti said that he's still going to rotate his goalkeepers. So to be honest, I wouldn't be that shocked if Robin Olsen was the man between the sticks for the West Brom game, just in terms of, you know, giving Pickford a little bit of a rest. You know, I think, you know, he did end up limping a little bit when he was coming off the pitch, didn't he? Because of a bit of a clattering that he took right at the end. So maybe it's just a little bit of a precaution. I'd put Olsen in for the West Brom game. I think he's a bit taller as well. So, you know, you can imagine West Brom are going to be pumping balls into the box. So, but I don't think it's going to be any impact on Jordan Pickford's performance. I think, you know, if he's fit, he's going to be back in for that Chelsea game. And I think, you know, this is Jordan Pickford making a real statement that, you know, he is Everton's number one choice, and he wants it to stay that way.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Preno, Adam, neatly brings us on to Thursday night, 6 o'clock at the Hawthorns, a reunion with Mr. Allardyce. But more importantly, Preno, a victory, well, for however long, maybe a couple of hours, maybe a couple of days. send Everton fourth in this Premier League table with 12 games of the season to go. Is it time to believe that something special could be on the horizon if we win?
I don't want to get too carried away, given the fact that we've still got, you know, best part of a third of the season to go. But yes, when you get into March and you're still, you know, in a position like this in the table, you think maybe, just maybe. And you could tell by some of the post-match comments last night that, you know, people around the football club are starting to think about it, if not believe it. Now, I don't want to get too carried away about Thursday. But having watched, you know, most of the West Brom Brighton game at the weekend, and I know West Brom won the match, but God, they were awful. Brighton should have battered them. You know, if they'd have had anything like the kind of, you know, chance conversion percentage that Everton are showing this season, which Everton are top of the table of, by the way, 15% chance conversion, which apparently is like, you know, almost twice like what most teams are doing. And we're at it again last night, you know, so the handful of chances that we created, we buried. So if we can, you know, be as ruthless and as clinical as that, you know, so on Thursday against a team who are a poor side, you know, that's fourth place, albeit fleetingly, because, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea play a couple of hours later and one of them's got to take points off each other, you know, regardless of who wins. I mean, whatever happens in that game, that'll work in our favour. But yeah, you do just think maybe, just maybe. I mean, the Chelsea game on Monday is going to be enormous, isn't it? Given how successful Carlo has been sending out teams to get results against the, you know, the inverted commas bigger clubs, especially away from home too. But yeah, I don't want to say I'm starting to believe, but I'm beginning to get just that little tingle in the back of your mind thinking maybe, just maybe. Let's see what happens on Thursday first. But I am quite confident about that game because West Brom, as they showed at the weekend, are a poor side and we should be looking to get 3 points there. You know, if we do, ask me again then.
We will do. I'll come back to you on Friday. I suppose same question to you, mate, because, you know, it 12 games is still a fair chunk, as Prono said, of a season to go. But as he said, equally, when you get into March and you go fourth, you aren't fourth in March by fluke. You're fourth in March for a reason. And for me, that would be because you're well in the mix. I don't know, how would you feel if we get the result on Thursday, if we get it, of course.
Yeah, I feel like it's a bit of a strange situation. I think the confidence would be a bit higher if we were playing this sort of like swashbuckling sort of football that was blowing teams away. But, you know, the fact that we're just grinding out results is maybe tempering expectations a little bit among some of the fan base, because, you know, people kind of think, oh, well, the results have got to swing the other way at some point. But no, I would feel quite confident because, you know, there have been so many games this season, you know, as Preno mentions, you know, going away to these bigger clubs where Everton have just shown this spirit that we haven't seen about them for years, to be able to grind out, you know, whether it was a comeback draw against Manchester United or, you know, a big win against Liverpool away from home. And it's those kind of results that just give you that little bit of, as Preno says, that little bit of hope at the back of your mind. I think With 12 games to go in this of all seasons as well, with how close things are, you know, it's no team is, apart from Man City, who are just running away with it at the top of the table, no team has shown the consistency, I think, to be able to be, you know, super confident with 12 games to go. I think even Leicester, to be honest, have probably got to be a little bit worried, especially with the injuries that they've got. You know, they'll be kind of looking over their shoulders a little bit, even though they're sat in third, I think, at the minute, aren't they? So, you know, there could potentially be two places up for grabs in the top four, the way things are going. So, with this many games of the season to go, I'm still, you know, trying to keep the excitement low for now. Just try and take it one game at a time. But, you know, if Everton do keep going the way they're going, you know, keep their away form up and, you know, manage to improve their home form, then, you know, there's no reason to suggest that they couldn't, well, definitely finish in Europe. But, you know, Champions League places, you know, who knows? I think it's gonna depend on the consistency of, you know, the likes of Liverpool, Chelsea, as I say, Leicester, even Tottenham trying to make a late push for it, West Ham as well. Imagine the top four ended up United, City, West Ham, and Everton. Like, that would be That'd be the top four, I think, that we all want to see. But I just still think there's a little bit too far in the season to go yet for me to get properly excited.
Pranav, I asked Carlo this question last night after the game. He in the previous question was asked about top four and he was trying to play it down a little bit, but then something that he was sort of giving off in his answer. So I went back to him and said, psychologically though, would that, you know, how significant would it be at this stage of the season even to go forth even for a couple of hours? And his answer sort of inferred, you know, it would be, but he didn't really want to say so. I mean, do you sense it would be, there would be any significance psychologically to just even as he says, touch the position?
Definitely. I mean, you think back to, Gylfi Sigurdsson's interview he gave at the weekend, where he conceded that the players were, you know, definitely talking and thinking about, if not Champions League qualification, you know, so certainly European qualification. And to get into that position, albeit briefly, it is definitely going to have a psychological impact on players and a little bit of a G-up, if you like, if motivation was ever an issue. You know, it's there in front of you, the prize that you could win. And it's very different, actually, to, oh gosh, you know, so I'm trying to think back to when we actually did qualify, you know, so for the Champions League qualifiers in 2005. And that was on the back of a storming run at the start of the season and got into the top four by December time, January time, and then just managed to hang on, you know, so, you know, grinding out the odd 1-0 wins here and there. And then the famous win over Manchester United, which was the one that everybody expected Everton to lose and to get Liverpool, give Liverpool the opportunity to climb above us. And, you know, they didn't, Everton won it. But that was almost like, you know, sort of hanging on like a Grand National winner, getting reeled in bit by bit, furlong by furlong, and finally hanging on till it was over the finishing line. This isn't. This is almost like, you know, so it's a coming from behind and beginning to, you know, remorselessly, you know, sort of reel in the front runners. And you're just getting to the opportunity now where you can see that little bit of, you know, sort of light on the horizon and think that, yeah, possibly we could do. So, yeah, if there's any motivation required at all, I think getting there, albeit briefly as it may be, will be very, very significant. To do that, we've got to win, though. We've got to win the game on Thursday. But that, again, gives, you know, sort of a great deal of motivation for what would normally be not the most, you know, sort of high-profile fixture, you know, sort of on the fixture list, a trip to the Hawthorns on a Thursday night. But then again, neither Southampton at home on a Monday night. But these games are all taking absolutely, you know, so much more significance now than they would have done normally. Because, you know, as we say, we're in March now and we're getting close to the business end of the season. So, yeah, if any motivation was needed, it's there in front of you. You know, fourth place, even for a short period of time, can definitely have a galvanising effect.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Just had a quick look at the last time we obviously we were even contemplating top four, which was Roberto's first season, 13-14. Yeah. In terms of the running, we didn't go fourth until April the 12th with that 1-0 win at Sunderland with the own goal taking us fourth, and then we stayed fifth for the rest of the season. But went fourth in January after a win over Norwich at home, but then didn't go fourth again, as I say, until April. But we just missed out, of course, to Arsenal that season. Adam, how do you think West Brom will approach Thursday? Because they're obviously desperately in need of points. Mm. But surely coming out and attacking Everton with Everton's speed and ability on the counter-attack would be footballing suicide, wouldn't it? And it would go against the grain of everything Allardyce sort of tends to stand for. You know, they need victories, don't they?
Yeah, and I think Allardyce will probably, I still think Allardyce will play this, you know, in a defensive sort of sense. You know, he's going to be trying, his end game is probably going to be trying to get a similar result as the one against Brighton, you know, just as I kind of said about our game against Southampton, just get the noses in front and do everything in your power to try and stop the opposition scoring against you. You know, that's kind of Allardyce's MO, isn't it? Just to frustrate the opposition, stop them in any way, shape or form, and then just lump as many crosses into the box as you can and, you know, try and disrupt things that way and try and sneak any sort of result that you can. And I think a lot of sides have probably done that at home against Everton, over, you know, the last few weeks and months, you know, as we say, you know, the likes of West Ham, Fulham, Newcastle, you know, they tried to do similar sort of things, you know, sitting back and, you know, keeping things as defensively tight as possible and then just being as clinical as they could with the chances that they got at the other end of the pitch. But Everton maybe haven't had to deal with that away from home a lot over recent weeks and months. So it's going to be interesting to see how Everton deal with it. I think if resting James Rodriguez, if it was, you know, just resting him in terms of, you know, a slight injury problem that he might have had, and making sure that he's fit for this game, I think is probably for the best, because I think we're going to need his sort of quality to try and open up what's going to be, you know, what you'd expect to be a really, really resolute West Brom defence. Because, you know, I know they're in the bottom three at the minute, but, you know, they're an Allardyce team still, so they're going to be as organised as possible and at the back, aren't they? So they're the kind of teams that Everton have, you know, traditionally, over the past few years, to be honest, have struggled to break down on so many occasions. You know, teams that are just going to sit back with two banks of four and just say, right, well, try and score against us then. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Everton deal with this game, because I think it's going to have to be, you know, even a different formation than the one that we saw against Southampton. I think Everton have maybe got to try and use wingers in this one to try and hit them from out wide and, you know, try and overload those areas and, you know, try and give as many sort of chances to Calvert-Lewin as we could, as we can that way, because there is something that concerns me about this game, to be honest, because I do just feel like it's going to be the typical Allardyce defensive, just sit back. It's not going to be an exciting game of football, really. So
I don't say that.
I just hope that Everton are going to have enough quality on the pitch. I'd like to see Rodriguez starting. I'd like to see Alex Iwobi starting, to be honest. I think his sort of direct nature will be really useful in this game. So fingers crossed, Everton will be able to have just enough quality to break down West Brom in this one, because I think it's going to be similarly a big test to Everton. Can they prove that they can break down teams that are just going to sit back and defend against them? Because, you know, they're going to have to if they do want to finish in these Champions League places. So it's going to be interesting, certainly.
Yeah, it's in the 6 o'clock slot on a Thursday night for a reason. I don't think anybody's anticipated a huge degree of entertainment that night. But I think what's in Everton's favour is that Sam Allardyce is very, very unhappy about the scheduling of the fixture. I mean, he's described it as disrespectful by the Premier League to shoehorn in another fixture either side of their two massive games. I mean, they played Brighton, you know, last weekend and won very luckily, very fortunately, I thought. And then they play Newcastle, you know, the following game, which again is massive for them. So this is a game right in the middle of it that, you know, so they might not be expecting to get a great deal from, and they're really unhappy about the scheduling of it as well. So, you know, I don't think Carlo is absolutely thrilled with the scheduling, you know, 4 days before a Chelsea game, but the fact he hasn't complained about it, you know, speaks volumes. He's got his players in a good place mentally for it, whereas maybe, just maybe, you know, so West Brom will be a little bit, I don't know, off the, you know, so game psychologically a little bit as a result of it.
Potential maybe for Allardyce to maybe rest one or two players, perhaps be beaten at full strength. And for either of you, same question, I suppose. Are we going to see Josh King start anytime soon? You know, this is the most congested period of you know, as congested a period as it's been. Is now the time for Carlo to give Josh King a go from the start, Adam?
Yeah, maybe. As you say, with it being such a congested period, I think certainly we're going to need Calvert-Lewin at the top of his game for that Chelsea match, aren't we? Because, you know, as Prenno was saying a little bit earlier, it could be a crucial one in terms of, you know, potential Champions League qualification or European qualification towards the end of the season. So, yeah, I would argue that maybe this could be the perfect opportunity for him to go and prove himself. As I say, I think it's going to be more about how we create the chances rather than anything else. So, you know, if we maybe put Josh King through the middle, try and put wingers either side of him, you know, James Rodriguez in behind him, maybe. I think that's probably going to give him the best opportunity to, you know, get one of those chances inside the box and score. And I think, you know, with Calvert-Lewin as well, as again, Preno mentioned a little earlier, I think while he didn't score yesterday, I think, you know, the effort levels that he put in, you know, were off the scale, as you'd expect. Once again, you know, he's winning those aerial duels constantly. I think he forced that Salisu off the pitch because he kept beating for headers. So he eventually just had to be subbed in the end. But I think maybe giving him a little bit of a rest for this one, bringing him off the bench if we need to. Hopefully we don't need to, but, you know, maybe bring him off the bench for the last half hour if we need to. But yeah, I think I would potentially agree. I think this is probably a decent enough opportunity for Josh King to try and come in. And, you know, as I say, as long as Everton can provide him the opportunities, hopefully he can show why he signed.
If he's ever going to start a game, this is the ideal opportunity. You know, only 3-day turnaround. Adam just said, Dominic Calvert-Lewin put an awful lot into that game on Monday night. Richarlison, as we mentioned earlier, was getting kicked from pillar to post all game. So if you're ever going to, like, pull him out of the firing line briefly, this will be the opportunity. Carlo said many times that, you know, he thinks that Josh King, you know, is ready to start a game, and he will start a game. But, you know, as every game goes on, he just doesn't seem to get that opportunity. And it's the fact that he was only introduced, like, for the last, like, 2 minutes or 3 minutes, whatever it was, last night, an indicator that maybe he is going to play more of a role on Thursday. Yeah, maybe we might see him from the start. I don't think that would be a big surprise if he did. And, you know, by all accounts, he's fit and he's producing in training, so that this could be the time for him.
Absolutely, we'll see. And, you know, physical presence as well, you know, and West Brom's, you know, defenders in the Allardyce mould will be challenged if we can play with that sort of physicality. And as you say, Adam, resting perhaps Calvert-Lewin ahead of the trip to Chelsea. So we shall see. But finally, on today's pod, predictions time. Adam, we'll start with you. How do you see it going on Thursday?
I think it's going to be really interesting. I think if Everton scored early, you know, in a similar vein that they did against Liverpool or even against Southampton, I think that it could be a fairly comfortable one. I don't want to try and say too much about that. But, you know, I think, you know, if Everton do take the lead, I think it really changes West Brom's game plan a little bit, because they will have to come out a little bit more, and, you know, maybe Everton can exploit them a little bit more after that. So I'm going to say 2-0, hopefully. Yeah, hopefully keep a clean sheet. 2-0. Just solid enough. Take us into that Chelsea game, please.
And bump up that goal difference that I wrote about last night. Yeah. Preno, how do you see it going?
Yeah, I mean, last night, after Richarlison scored the early goal, I thought, this is it. My 3-0 prediction and Richarlison to score two goals is going to absolutely fly in. And then it all went pear-shaped after that. So I'm loath to suggest, you know, a goal fest again. Especially when you look at some of West Brom's recent results, you know, we're 1-0 at the weekend, 0-0 before that against Burnley, 1-1 before that against United. So, you know, the Allardyce effect is beginning to, you know, sort of take hold now. He's very, very keen not to lose games. And so he is going to keep it tight. But we've got more quality. And as I said, you know, having watched that game at the weekend, how on earth Brighton didn't beat them out of sight, I've no idea. Some of their finishing was rank. I mean, two penalties says it all. You know, so managing to miss two penalties. So I'm going to go with Adam. I think 2-0. I think, you know, we're better than, you know, just sneaking another 1-0 win. But I think, you know, they're not going to come out at all, even if they concede an early goal. West Brom, I think they'll just stick at, you know, the game plan that Allardyce usually has. But yeah, we've got far more quality than they have in our side. So yeah, I'm quite confident with the 2-0 away win.
We'll go for a clean sweep. I think 2-0 as well. I think if James is fit, hopefully he is, as Carlo suggests. I think it's an ideal game for James, isn't it? And I know it was against 10 men back in September when they came to Goodison, but James absolutely just tore them from pillar to post, didn't he? He was having a great afternoon. So more of the same, perhaps not quite as much of a flourish on the scoreline, but I think we will win 2-0 as well. Chaps, thank you very much for your company. Excellent as always. Thank you very much for listening. So we're back Thursday evening at the Hawthorns. I'll be down there, Adam covering the game also. And then we'll be back to pod again on Friday after the manager's press conference, as we preview a huge game on Monday night when the Blues go to Chelsea. And hopefully they go to Stamford Bridge in the top four, but we shall see. Thank you very much for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.